Greetings, Chicagoland. Thank you for tuning in to the weekly program, Building Community, Strengthening Nations, based on improving lives through public service and volunteerism. Today's presentation is brought to you by the Forum to Achieve, Altruism, Compassion, and Tolerance, the FACT organization, with more than a 75-year legacy of promoting peace, harmony, equality, and social justice for all. Building Community, Strengthening Nations features newsmakers and movers and shakers engaged in enlightening discussions on current issues and events that positively impact our diverse communities. The FACT organization invites you to contact us for general information or referral services, volunteer opportunities, and suggestions, questions, or comments regarding programming topics and guests. Please call FACT at 773-424-8002 to reach our 24-hour voicemail and facsimile. Our email address is faactorg@aol.com. Now tell your friends to tune in to FACT every Tuesday evening at 7:30 p.m. We're streaming live over the internet at www.thechicagolighthouse.org. My name is Ruth M. Fairfax Frazier. I am the founder and executive director of the FACT organization, and today I am so pleased to serve as your host. FACT is always excited about this opportunity to share time with you, our most valued listening public, with different weekly topics of interest that positively influence our communities. However, as we always say, this can only be accomplished with your help. The fact is, we all need each other, and by uniting our efforts, we can make a positive difference for everyone. In a nutshell, FACT's combined vision and mission is to help create a better world through educating the public and coalescing with others to eradicate biases and prejudices, as well as hate crime. Season's greetings, everyone. We have a very exciting program to share with you today. We are bringing Mr. Tom Strober, a musician and producer who has worked with some of the renowned musicians that you are so familiar with. He's going to share his story with us today, and we want you to just sit back and enjoy his inspirational music as well.
Yeah.
Strober has been playing guitar for 50 years and blends classical, rock, jazz, blues, and Lakota musical forms together to create his unique sound. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Thank you, Ruth. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, we started off with a musical selection called Reflections. Can you tell us what that's about?
Sure. During my past 18 years residing on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota, one of my aspirations was to, at my own expense, develop a facility that would be able to assist those who had talent without any financial backing of themselves to be able to record their material and have it available for distribution within the community or wherever else they wanted to take it. So I was basically a conduit to help others pursue what they were capable of pursuing. This particular song, Reflections, is based around a vision I had with two brothers, one, both musicians, one who played bass and wrote some very interesting lyrics that were very story-like, and then his brother, who is a very accomplished drummer in his own right. So what we basically did is set out on a venture to self-produce a CD of these original songs that are influenced culturally within the Lakota framework, but with a little bit of a twist of being rather modernized and contemporary in the genre of rock and blues and some fusion. So Reflections started out with a song was brought over, looked at it. We laid the tracks and put this thing together. And it's a very powerful song. Like I said, it's very story-like. It features Travis Kilsplenty doing the vocals, Percy Kilsplenty, his brother, on drums, and then the rest of the instrumentation, bass and guitar, I provided. This song receives quite a bit of airplay in Indian country on the indigenous radio networks and whatnot. We're very proud of this. It speaks well of the end result of when you become a conduit for creative talents of other people and empower them and bring them and coach them to their potential. So this is Reflections by Travis Kilsplenty.
Well, we certainly enjoyed that selection, and throughout our program we will be listening to other tracks that you have put together. And Tom, I'd like to ask you, where did you get started? I understand you were right from the Chicago area.
Very much so. 51st and Wood, that's pretty much where the family roots are.
Okay.
We became urbanites or suburbanites down in the south side in the Creed area. We were so far out of the urban environment, we actually had farm fields next to us.
Okay.
You know, so I always had this kind of country feel, But worked in the city. I worked at the Sherwin-Williams plant in Kensington for about 3 years. In my early years, my father, at my age of five, was trying to teach me to play the violin.
Oh, wow.
My father, being an accomplished musician, played classical, did a lot of performing with various orchestras, and then in his later years played in the pit symphonies for the various Broadway production type shows that came in the Chicago area. He's a very compassionate man. However, the violin and I did not quite work together.
So at what age did you decide that the guitar was your main axe?
Well, when Father wasn't around, I used to get the violin out. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was playing the thing like a guitar. Not, you know, heck with the bow. I just started plucking on those strings to see what they would do. Okay, so that experience with the guitar was rather interesting. I was at a friend's house. I was probably about 11. I'd say about 11. Mm-hmm. And his brother, his older brother, had an electric guitar. And I never saw one before in the flesh and blood. And his brother picked it up and started playing it. And there was a big song that was the hot thrill back then, that Outer Limits song. And I watched him play that. I watched him play the lead part, and then I watched him play the melody thing that runs up off the lower strings.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, I picked the thing up, and I started doing it.
Okay.
So after a couple of times going over there, I remember one day my mom came over to pick me up, to bring me back home, and said, "Hey, now watch this." And I grabbed this guitar, and I started playing this thing, and she couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the start came from. Now, the challenge was, how do I acquire my own guitar? I was delivering newspapers, making $3 a week. So I saved my money for 10 weeks. I had $30 stashed away, and I could then buy my first electric guitar. Now, there is a stigma back then. You know, this was like in the middle 60s, and my parents were pretty conservative and whatnot. And next thing you knew, they thought I was going to wind up in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco with hair down to my waist and burning draft cards and whatnot. So there was a struggle there. They wanted to see me go more in the direction of get an acoustic guitar, get one of those country western things. You know? Mm-hmm. No, I want electric. And then I had to, you know, become my own lawyer, my own advocate at, you know, 11 years old. It's like, I worked hard. I delivered all these newspapers. This is my money. I'd like to be able to use my money to get something that appeals to me, mm-hmm. appeals to my heart. So they gave in. Mm-hmm. Then the next thing was, I need to take lessons. So lessons at that time were going for $3 a shot. Okay, I make $3 a week. I can get one lesson a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they wouldn't take me to get lessons. So I taught myself the rest of the way. And I did the same with the piano. I just get a feel for these things, and it speaks to me. And then I have to speak back to it, and we call and respond to each other. And it becomes a real intimate relationship that carried with me, that brought me through all different travels on my life journey.
Well, who were some of your very early mentors?
Well, this is interesting because back in 73, about the time when Rotary Connection broke up, Bobby Sims, who was a driving force with that band, was doing a single out in Rush Street. And he and I met. And the next thing you know, Bobby Sims starts his old Bobby Sims Trio. This is a thing that some people may remember when Bobby Sims was out in the South Side around Dalton Harvey. In fact, I think it was Harvey when he released his first record back in the very, very early 60s. So I played bass for Bobby Sims. Bobby Sims played an electric 12-string with flat-wound strings on it, tuned down a full step. He could make that thing talk. He would do, six or seven Elvis tunes all strung together. Do the same thing with Chuck Berry songs. He had these medleys, and how he could just bend those strings, and they were like, you know, steel girders, heavy gauge, a 12-string, no less. But we developed a relationship where we could read one another. He didn't even have to turn around and tell the band what song he was going to call. It's like I already had it in my head. It would just come to me. So this was the first time I had the opportunity to have this intimacy where the intuitive side kicked in and started to develop an understanding of how intuition works in music with mm-hmm. other musicians. So from that point, we go a little bit further forward. I was working around the South Side, playing with a lot of different blues players. My first recording session was in the home of Rollo Radford's mother, in her basement. I think it was around 90th in Michigan. A friend of mine that I was working with, who is a jazz drummer, Billy Salter, put this all together. So that was my first recording session. That was probably in about 74. Now, beforehand, about the same time that I picked up the guitar, I started fooling around with tape recorders.
Mm-hmm.
And both were equally fascinating. I used to record myself. I still have some of those old reels, too, from back then. But I started working with things, and recording fascinated me a little bit later on when the psychedelic era came out, where you had real impressionistic music that was being written and recorded. You could listen to any of those LPs, any of those cuts, and you knew who the musicians were because they were able to retain their individuality.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody sounded alike. Everybody had their own signature style, their own signature sound. And that was a real great era. Now, going past Bobby Sims and my experiences with Billy Salter, we move a little bit further. It was through Bobby Sims that I was put in front of England Dan and John Ford, England Dan and John Ford Coley, who were in a contemporary rock genre, a little lighter music. Got to open up for them. England Dan is actually Dan Seals, the brother to Jimmy Seals from Seals and Cross. But anyway, with Dan Seals, it came back around years later. I opened up for him at Kansas City Municipal Auditorium. But it was through Bobby Sims that I was exposed to the background things that take place with music production, stage production, the etiquette, the protocol, and what works, what doesn't work, what you leave at the gate, as we used to say. You mm-hmm. leave it behind you. You go on stage. You differences, whatever, they're gone. So these were good, important things that happened to me in my early years. Then in the mid-70s, I moved to Des Moines with the intention of not coming back to Chicago except to see family. I wanted to go into a rural area, get a new life, exposed to something. So I lived out in the country. Nearest neighbor was miles away. I enjoyed that. I wound up playing a lot. Now we'll bring up Michelle Scaione. She was an Italian lady. She owned a bar in the roughest neighborhood in the Des Moines inner city, right off of Forest Avenue and ML King Drive. There used to be drive-by shootings. We even had shootings in the bar. But she brought me in there. She wanted me to run sound. She wanted me to play in the house band. She had this nice thing going on, open jam. So house band play 30, 40 minutes, and then we'd start bringing people up. And this was a tight ship. It was well run. Everybody got a chance. And it was placed on our backs to make sure that the people that came in to sit in were poised with the stronger musicians who could complement what they did. There was to be absolutely 100% good music and good feelings on that stage.
All the time.
All the time. So we had the flexibility to jam. We had the flexibility to work with other people, you know, to make them feel comfortable and empower them likewise. So one night, we're close to closing time. Two guys come in. We hadn't seen these two guys in years. And well, it seemed like years. We hadn't seen them for almost a year. The conversation goes on. Well, where you guys been? Well, we've been in Chicago playing. Playing with who? Buddy Miles. Oh, yeah, right. Well, you guys are probably in jail. And you just come up with this. Anybody can be gone and then come back with a story like that. Well, okay, that's fine. 2 weeks later, when I'm setting that stage up, and there's a window that overlooked Forest Avenue, and I see this big stretch limo, double parked in front of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told Michelle, I said, you got somebody in a limo in front of your club. What's going on? And she looks and she comes back, says, oh, they're just waiting on traffic. She says, no, they're not waiting on traffic. They're double parked. The cars are going both directions.
Mm-hmm.
So I went about my business. A little bit later, she runs up to me and says, hey, that's Buddy Miles that was in that limo. He came here to play.
Okay.
So Tom Jamal and his partner in crime and music, who were working with Buddy Miles, brought Buddy Miles to the Cloud Lounge.
Okay.
And there was a lot of crow to be eaten. Okay, now, I was influenced by Jimi Hendrix. Everybody knows that. It was common knowledge. I studied Hendrix. There's so much depth in how he crystallized and became like a prism that re-energized music, influenced every aspect of music as we know it in all the genres, whether it was rap, contemporary, country, rock and roll, blues. He brought something that rewired everybody's thinking. And as Billy Cox has been quoted, who was Hendrix's bass player from 69 up through the end, he said, there's two types of musicians. There's the musicians who will admit that they were influenced by Jimi Hendrix and those who won't. So here's Buddy Miles. And I always looked at Hendrix as being one to have to understand and study and get the relationship understood and comprehended of cause and effect, of how everything fit together with his compositions. He was brilliant when it came to arranging. He was brilliant when it came to production. He was brilliant as a musician. So all of these things coupled together, here's Buddy Miles, who was instrumental with one of the most highly regarded performances in the music scene, and that was with Hendrix's Band of Gypsies that appeared at the Fillmore East in New York. They did two shows in 69 of January, New Year's Eve, and then 1970, New Year's Day. This stands alone as one of the highest, most highly regarded performances ever captured on film, captured on tape.
Mm-hmm.
Miles Davis had high acclaim for what Hendrix did at the Fillmore.
Okay.
This was the first time fusion music was really created.
Mm-hmm.
And Hendrix brought those elements with Billy Cox on bass and Buddy Miles on drums. Okay, now we go back to where Buddy Miles walks into the Cloud Lounge. House band gets up, starts... Oh, well, let me back up. Michelle Scione says, he'd like to talk to you. So I walked over to the booth where Buddy Miles was seated. Buddy Miles introduces himself, a very gentleman, humble, down to earth, and he said, I came in here. I'd like to play a little guitar. I brought an amp. Could you fix me up with a mic? He says, I can do that. He says, great. And I'll play a little drums later, but I wanted to play some guitar.
Okay.
And Buddy Miles is a multi-instrumental artist.
Mm-hmm.
He was in his own right.
And many people only knew him for drums.
Right, but he played guitar, he played keyboards, he played horn,
mm-hmm.
he played the bass. So I get him situated, and the house band's going to play for 30 minutes. And then we're going to get other people up to sit in. And Buddy Miles had to sit in. So bring Buddy Miles up after, you know, our 30-minute routine. But they boot me off stage and bring a ringer up to play guitar. Somebody, you know, one of the, you know, insider with the house band.
Okay.
So it's kind of a politic thing there. So I sat up. After watching Buddy Miles for 20 minutes, I'm just stunned of how much control he had over this room and over these people,
mm-hmm.
and how he projected this energy into them. I thought, you know, this is a chance of a lifetime. I always wanted to play with somebody that worked with Hendrix, and it's going to escape me. I went up and asked for my guitar back. The guy gives me my guitar back, says, don't show him up. He's a special invited guest. I'm thinking, I'm not going to show anybody up. So Buddy Miles and I start playing together. Now, Buddy Miles was watching some stuff when he was sitting down before he got up, and he noticed that the house band was kind of tilting me a little bit when I tried to play a solo. Drummer was dropping beats, and the bass player was doing some things where you had no movement. It was all, you know, garbled together, and I didn't feel comfortable. I couldn't play. It's like, jam me up. So Buddy Miles and I are both playing guitar together side by side. I'm playing underneath Buddy Miles. I was looking for the hole. I went for the hole. I filled that hole,
mm-hmm.
and I kept this thing moving. Buddy Miles takes a couple solos, and all of a sudden he quits. He looks at me and says, play on, brother. So I did. Then we played one other tune together, and then he got off stage. I got off stage. I said, whoever wants to play this thing can play it. I went in the back room. Buddy Miles is in the back room. He was talking to a guy that he was going to have sit in on bass for the rest of the night because he was going to get up and play in a little bit and finish the whole night out. Buddy Miles turns to me and says, you're one bad blankety, 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 blah, blah, blah. You're a monster on that guitar. I'm getting up in about a half hour to 45 minutes. I want you to play guitar with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was a great affirmation. A week later, I come back to Chicago over the Thanksgiving holidays. That Friday morning, open up the Tribune to see what's going on, you know, and going through the entertainment guide. I'm looking there. Oh, they're having this 50th birthday observance for Hendrix over at Buddy Guy's Legends. Buddy Miles is going to be there. This one's going to be there. Archangels, on and on. I went there. When Buddy Miles walked on stage, he saw me sit in center row, three seats back, third row back, general seating. I'm sitting next to Eddie Von Shaw and his girlfriend. And I told Von Shaw, I told Eddie about, hey, you know, this happened to me a week ago, play with Buddy Miles. That's why I come out here. I want to see him doing his thing. Buddy Miles walks on that stage, sees me, comes over, shakes my hand, gets back up on the stage. Eddie Von Shaw's eyeballs are probably still leaving dents on the floor of Buddy Guy's old legends.
Well, Tom, you have a wonderful career in music, and we want you to promise to come back and tell us more stories about your journey and what you've accomplished as a musician as well as a producer. Could you promise to do that?
I'd like to come back. I really would, and this is the first time I've really talked about myself in a long time, you know?
Okay.
But it's better, the stories are better, you know, the real stories of the other people that supported how I did it and did whatnot. I'm just a small factor in this. They're the ones with the talent. I just have the ears to be the funnel to put it on tape, so to speak, and get them going where they need to go.
As a producer.
Right.
Okay. Well, with just the minute that we have left today, can you give us your interpretation of what the holiday season is all about?
It's a reflection of what we should be throughout the year to one another, compassionate, unconditional. Seek time to understand those who are different than ourselves, to promote the attributes and the virtues of unity. Unity with diversity, to be outgoing, compassionate, selfless, to become servants to one another, and most importantly, start taking the barriers apart that have been created around us by our lack of understanding of other people's belief systems, other people's ethnicity, their cultural orientation. We need to come back together as human beings. Our change in the betterment of humanity comes from ourselves. It doesn't come from leadership. Leadership is only a reflection of our own state. We improve ourselves at the grassroots level, and we grow, and we become a homogeneous, diversified, content humanity.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Tom. And we're going to leave our audience with a selection called Wayfaring Strangers.
Now, Wayfaring Stranger was recorded with Steve Emery and myself. We used a drum machine for the drum track. Steve Emery played acoustic guitar, keyboards. I played bass on this, and he has an incredible voice. We did everything in one take, and then he wanted to overdub his vocals, and he did. Very interesting thing about Steve Emery. He's a former attorney general for the Standing Rock Reservation. We got to spend a couple years together recording lots of different music that he wrote. Wayfaring Stranger is has its roots in gospel. It's an Episcopal orientation, if I understand right. But what Steve did, as he is a fluent Lakota speaker, midway into the song, you will hear the song sung in the Lakota language.
Wonderful.
And the melancholy spirit that emanates from that song touches everybody.
Chicagoland, happy holidays, and stay tuned to Chris Radio over the holiday season. Bye now. I'm only good.